You may be seated. I invite you to turn to the back of your bulletin where you'll find our gospel reading for this morning. It is an epiphany, and I want to tell you about an epiphany I had early in my ministry, an epiphany that forever changed my perspective on things, that actually stuck with me. It was more than momentary. Early in my ministry, hospital visits were absolutely terrifying. The reason why is I didn't have to do that many. We had a visitation pastor. It was a church of 3,000. One guy was in charge of all the hospital visits. My primary responsibilities were with singles who were 20-something to 40-something. I had maybe a handful of hospital visits the whole time. Most of them were relatively healthy. If they went to the hospital, I'd go visit them, but it was just few and far between. I had a younger crowd that I was responsible for. And so when I did go to the hospital, I was always anxious and fearful. I felt absolutely weak and incompetent and useless because I knew something that most people don't realize. I knew I could do absolutely nothing. I have a theology degree, not a medical degree. Blood and needles make me squeamish. I do not view myself as a comforting person. I just don't feel that I'm that kind of person that makes others feel better with their lives. I usually feel like I'm making people more anxious. I tend to hear a diagnosis and I think, oh no, doom, instead of, oh, you might get better. And so in my mind, I was incompetent, weak, and useless. That's why when I moved to my second church in Glastonbury, Connecticut, had to make a lot of hospital visits there. I had an older congregation. I remember visiting Mary. Mary was an elderly woman. She developed sepsis. And those of you who know hospital visits know when you develop sepsis, that's probably it. That's probably all she wrote. I went to visit her. It was known she was probably going to die, and when I arrived, she was absolutely unconscious and she hadn't been conscious for days. She was completely unresponsive, and so I knew to do the only thing I know to do, and that is, well, maybe she'll hear something. I'm going to talk anyway. I greeted her. I shared with her what was going on at the church. I then prayed with her. I read some scriptures, and I thought that it would lead to absolutely nothing. I was the only person visiting her. She had no family. I thought, you know, this was, again, another useless, incompetent hospital visit. Weeks later, she arrived at church because she survived. She survived this thing, and she came back to church, and she immediately pulled me aside, and she thanked me. She said, I thank you for coming to visit me. I remember you visiting me. While you were there, I experienced the presence of Christ. And that's when the epiphany hit me, that it's only presence that matters, that I felt so incompetent, so weak, that I was accomplishing nothing of any value, and yet somehow, in the mystery of God, she was aware of my presence, and in her mind, she was experiencing the comforting presence of the risen and living Christ. The epiphany was that no one expects me to fix anything. They simply desire presence and support and love. And I discovered it's through the weakness of mere physical presence that Christ is manifest. And that epiphany sticks to me this day. Every time I go on a visit, my first prayer as I'm entering the hospital is, may I be the presence of Christ to them. May I be a comforting and listening and loving presence so that they know that not only does their family support them, not only does their pastor support them, but Christ is with them, behind them, before them, and in them. Well, that was my epiphany. Epiphany is always a surprising illumination. Some experience or action happens and you see the world in a whole new different light. When it comes to people, sometimes people will say a word or they'll do some act or we'll experience something with them and we can never look at them the same way again. All of a sudden, our perception of them completely changes so that nothing's ever the same again. And that is just as true in our relationship with God. That there are certain moments of epiphany where we hear a word or we read of an action or we have an experience and we're never able to think of God and our relationship to God in the same way again. That's what's happening in Matthew 17. The disciples are experiencing an act, a moment of epiphany that will forever change their understanding of who they are, who God is, and who Jesus is for them. This is the second big epiphany in Matthew. The first epiphany was much more private. It was at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. You may remember it. We looked at it this year. The heavens are opened at Jesus' baptism, and Jesus hears the Word of God say, "You are my beloved Son, in you I'm well pleased." That's the beginning of his ministry. Now we're at the exact middle of his ministry. In the middle of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, there is this second epiphany that marks the beginning of the journey to the cross. It is an epiphany that's not private, it's an epiphany that's public, and because of that, it's going to not only console Jesus, it's going to give a certain new sense of who Jesus is to these three close disciples who are following Jesus. The epiphany begins, if you notice that interesting phrase, 6 days later, because this is meant to be read in light of the preceding chapter. 6 days prior to this, Jesus had asked his disciples, "I've been around you for a long time. Other people have other things to say about me, but who do you say the Son of Man is?" And they give different answers, and Peter eventually says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God," to which Jesus says, "Humans didn't give you that insight. You didn't get that insight from flesh and blood. My Father has revealed it to you. You have had an epiphany. God has shown you something." And it's at that point that Jesus, for the first time in Matthew, begins to talk about his suffering and his death and his resurrection to come. Not until they have this sure sense that you're the Christ. Well, when Jesus says, "I'm going to suffer, I'm going to die, I'll be crucified, and I'll be raised again," the disciples can't hear that from him because they cannot fathom a Messiah who suffers. Messiah is supposed to come and reign forever and conquer his enemies. He's not supposed to suffer and die. So they not only can't hear the word of suffering, they can't hear the word of resurrection that follows. They don't hear it all. This word that I'll suffer and die and I will be raised. And so in order to give them an epiphany, Jesus 6 days later takes these three disciples, Peter, James, and John, up to a mountain. And there's a reason why Jackie read from Exodus, the account of Moses on the mountain, because everything that happens at this transfiguration has a parallel to Moses' mountain as Moses ascends to receive the law. Both of these events take place on a mountain. In both events, there's a bright cloud that overshadows the mountain. In both events, there's a shining. For Moses, after he experiences God's glory, his face shines with that glory, only to fade away over time. Here we have a shining, but it's so much greater. Because Jesus' entire body, verse 20, he was transfigured and his face shines like the sun and his clothes become dazzling white. The very glory of God emanates in and through his humanity. And it's at this point you realize that what is occurring is not just an epiphany, but it gives us insights in our deepest question of how does the finite encounter the infinite? How does the creature encounter the creator? How does the limited encounter the limitless? How does the temporal encounter the eternal? That's the sole question of religion. How do we, who have an abyss before us, how are we who are limited, finite, temporary, how can we encounter the God who is transcendent, being beyond being, unfathomable, incomprehensible? How can we in any way encounter this God? And the answer in the Hebrew Scriptures is God has to descend and encounter us. And so in the Hebrew story, you have covenants given, where God reveals the infinite. You have words given. You have prophets that speak. You have theophanies, like the burning bush. And then you have the greatest epiphany, the temple, where the glory of God fills this building of stone and brick and wood with God's glory. All those are wonderful, but they still don't hit the mark. Because now we're seeing God's glory, the infinite, touch us in the most imminent way, as close as humanly possible, as God's glory is revealed in and through the humanity of Jesus Christ. The same humanity that you and I share. It's not as if God removes the veil of Jesus' humanity and there's just glory that shines. It is in and through His very being, in and through His humanity. Not discarding it, but through it, that God's glory emanates. A glory that's always been there. It's deep and profound and beautiful, but it's not always obvious. Now, for a moment, it is obvious. Now, here's what's challenging for us moderns, because we've all been raised on skepticism and doubt and empiricism. We in our modern world have a lot of room for empiricism. We have no room for epiphany. We have a lot of room for dissecting and analyzing and saying, well, this can't really happen. We have little room for wonder. And epiphany, if it's anything, is about wonder. Because if you dissect and critique and tear this apart, just like dissecting a creature, you remove the life of it. This is not about empiricism. This is about epiphany. Something wondrous is being manifest and unveiled. Something beyond reason. Something beyond fathoming. Something that can only be communicated in epiphany. This shouldn't describe us. We say we want to encounter God, and God is transcendent, eternal, and infinite. We say we want to have this connection with this being beyond being. Well, here it is, as close as humanly possible, in our very humanity, breathing our own breath, the revelation of God through the humanity of Christ. And that, dear friends, is bound to blow a few fuses. And of course, it's blowing fuses. If you pay attention to Peter, verse 4, his fuses are blowing. He's fearful. He says the first thing that comes to mind. In the understatement of the century, he says, it's good to be here. And then he says, you know, I'm going to build some booths. We'll memorialize this. I'll make one for Jesus. I'll make one for Moses. I'll make one for Elijah. And it's at that point, as Peter is babbling in his fear, not quite knowing what to say, but being Peter, feeling compelled to say something, that verse 5, while he was still speaking, a bright cloud overshadows them, which is going to only increase his fear. And from the cloud, the divine voice speaks. The heavens are opened once again. In this public epiphany, and God says, this is my Son, the Beloved. With Him I'm well pleased. Words I've heard before, and we've heard before. Then an additional word, listen to Him. This is God's way of very gently saying, Peter, you have a bad idea. Because to build these booths makes Moses and Elijah equal with Jesus. Jesus is preeminent. He's my beloved Son. And now, just like that mountain that Moses was on, if you remember it, the Moses mountain, 10 commandments were given. Now just one is given. Now we've moved on in the narrative of God's encountering humankind, and God has simply one command, not 10, for His followers, and that simple command is, look, listen to Him. That's the one command. If you don't need no other commands, it's listen to Him. Not Moses, not Elijah. Not to say that they are in any way bad, it's to say that they were preparatory. They all lead to Jesus. So listen to Him. And you can imagine now Peter is even more frightened, and we read about that fear in verse 6. The disciples heard this, they fell to the ground, and they were overcome by fear. That's what happens when we encounter the transcendent. But Jesus came up and touched them and said, get up and do not be afraid. This is another parallel with Moses' mountain. At the Mount of Moses, the people of God said to Moses, Moses, you go up the mountain, we're afraid to. You go up, get the commands, you speak to us. We don't want God to speak to us. That terrifies us. We want you to speak to us. And so there was fear at that first mountain. Here's there's that same fear as the disciples are overwhelmed by the presence of God. And the thing you got to love, instead of two tablets of commands being offered them, Jesus, who has just revealed the glory of God, shown the glory that is latent within Him, touches them. Touches them and says, hey guys, you don't need to be afraid. I know this is a lot. I know fuses are blowing. I know that this can be terrifying. But you need to understand, there's no reason to fear. This epiphany is given for your comfort. It's given to carry you. It's not given to overwhelm you. So please, do not fear. And at that moment, boom, verse 8, the epiphany's over. No one's there but Jesus is alone, and there's this final aftermath in verse 9. As they're coming down the mountain, Jesus says, "Don't tell anyone about this until I've risen from the dead," which is Jesus' way of saying, you know, you've been given an epiphany, but you guys aren't going to understand this fully until after the resurrection, because you still don't have a way to comprehend how Messiah can be glorious and still suffer and die. So it's not until the resurrection, when you see this same glory again, that you'll finally be able to piece all the pieces together. But until then, between now and then, you're going to have to go through the challenge of suffering and rejection and abandonment and the cross. And I'm giving you this vision, this proleptic vision of the future, that you might endure all that's coming. That you might know that this suffering does not eclipse the glory. That the glory has always been there, it just wasn't unveiled. And the glory will continue to be there, even in the cross, and then beyond at the resurrection. This is an epiphany. It's a transcendent reality beyond words. And what's significant here isn't the special effects. What's significant is we are seeing the glory of God in the face of Christ. That God is revealing God's self most intimately, not anymore just through covenant or through words or through clouds or through temples, but through our very humanity. And this vision is given to inspire confidence that the disciples and we ourselves might take up Christ's mission and endure whatever comes our way, knowing that glory is always there and it always awaits. He's given them this vision to carry them through the humiliation of the cross. He wants them to know that this glory is always true. That suffering can't snuff out the glory. Which, if you think about it, Peter's attempt to just stay on the mountain, to build the booths, is his way of saying, you know, Lord, it's good for us to be here. Let's build some booths so we can kind of just hang here. We can create a safe space. This mountain of glory is where we want to be and where we want to stay, because Peter, like all of us, wants the glory but not the suffering. Peter wants to see this wonderful epiphany. He doesn't want to see how it works in and through the challenges that are to come. Marietta Anschutz puts it this way: Peter looks for a way to stop time. He wants to build a safe sanctuary away from the world, to be content in the moment, saving Jesus and themselves from the heartache to come. They cannot, nor can we. We experience that desire to build the booth and to stop time when we're in the hospital room and a horrible diagnosis is given, and we think, boy, if we could just stop time. Or when we see some horrible event on the television news and the chaos that surrounds it, and we think, oh, if we could just go back to the day before. Or as we watch our children grow up and mature, and we think, oh, how wonderful it would be if I could just stop time and they could be that cute little curious kid they once were. We all look for places to build the booths and to stop the time, because that which is ahead of us seems too much to bear and we want to stay in the moment. But this epiphany is given not that the disciples would stay in the moment, but so they'd be strengthened as they go back down the mountain into real life. Marietta also says this. This is so good. She says, the transfiguration offers the disciples the paradox that while there's nothing they can do to save themselves from suffering, there is also no way they can shield themselves from the light of God that sheds hope in their darkest moments. The mountain was the way for God to prepare a human band of companions for the sacred journey, to offer something to hold on to when they descend into the crushing reality of the world alone. If you think about it, this epiphany that is momentary but is meant to carry through suffering is a bit like, just a few weeks past, we celebrated Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And it's very interesting when you look at his life, April 3rd, 1968. That's one day before he's assassinated. April 3rd, 1968, he's in Memphis and he's advocating for the sanitation workers on a worker strike, and he hadn't planned to speak. He had no notes prepared. The people demand that he say something, and you've heard these words before, and this is all about epiphany carrying you in the suffering. He says, "I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I've been to the mountaintop and seen." He knew that there was suffering in the valley below, but he'd had a momentary glimpse of glory that was there to carry him. And so he says, we don't know what's coming. There are difficult days ahead. Who knows what will happen? But I've been there. I've seen the mountain. The next day he'd be assassinated. In suffering we are touched. That's the other thing I love about this, and it's easy to overlook. Verse 7 is so important. This very Jesus who has manifested glory so powerful, they fall into their knees in absolute fear. They are out of their minds. And Jesus touches them and says, "Get up, do not be afraid." We all know that nothing brings more comfort than simply to have someone hug us, touch us, hold us, carry us, let us know that no matter what comes, they are for us. Patrick Wilson, this is the way that God comes into the world. Not simply the brilliant cloud of mystery, not only a voice thundering from heaven, but also a human hand laid upon a shoulder and the words, "Do not be afraid." The transcendent, the infinite, the eternal God, manifesting God's self through the humanity of Christ, reaches out the hand and touches the finite and the weak, and the fearful, with good news. God is going to be with you. I'm with you. Don't be afraid. You've seen the epiphany. You've seen the glory. You've seen it just for a moment, but I want you to carry it with you because this is always true. God touches us in our fear and says, "Get up. Do not be afraid." As we wrap this up, my hope is for you and I that we'd hold on to this momentary glimpse of glory, that we'd hold on to this epiphany, because we'll need it in the valleys that are to come. Jesus does not want this vision to slip away. He wants it to be a true epiphany that's not just momentary, but that forever changes their perspective on who Jesus is for them and who they are to Jesus. That's why I want to leave with one last quote, and it's just such a good one. If you've read the Chronicles of Narnia, there's a book called The Silver Chair, and Aslan takes the children up to glory, essentially. He takes them to this glorious place where they have their transfiguration experience, and they see wonderful things, but then he's got to send them back into the world. And listen to how Aslan speaks. It's much like what Jesus is hoping for his people. "Here on the mountain, I've spoken to you clearly," says Aslan. "I will not often do so down in Narnia. Here on the mountain, the air is clear and your mind is clear. As you drop down into Narnia, the air will thicken. Take great care that it does not confuse your mind. And the signs which you've learned here will not look at all as you expect them to look when you meet them there. That is why it is so important to know them by heart and pay no attention to appearance. Remember the signs and believe the signs. Nothing else matters." This is Jesus in this moment epiphany saying to his disciples, "We can't stay here. Not now. There's work to be done. I've given you a momentary glimpse of glory to sustain you. It's always true, but it won't always seem to be true. Because the darkness and the suffering and the hardships may eclipse it. So I'm inviting you, hold on to this epiphany. Hold on to it."